The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
Football Weekly Extra. Today, welcome back, club football. How we've missed you. Premier League. Man United battling for the championship. Visit a West Ham side hoping to avoid same. There's mutiny at the Villa, while West Brom Liverpool is Hodgson Dalglish. A Baggies win could improve their ranking. But don't ask Roy to say that. Elsewhere, Italy. Title on the line in the Milan derby while Juventus play Roma. And Italian football or Guardian soulmates. Which is better for fixing up matches? Sid in Spain. Will the weekend's games go ahead? If they do, will Villarreal derail Barca? And what happened in the big Sid Jose showdown? We ask the questions that matter. All that plus posts and assorted other points of interest in today's Football Weekly. Hi, everybody, and on board today, wise heads, plenty of experience, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Sean Ingle.
Hello.
Nice to see you, Sean. What have you been up to, you crazy guy?
I've been renovating my house.
Oh. Paolo Bandini.
Hi. Hi, James.
Nice to see you. This doubled, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, then. Listen, Sean, you insist that we start with the smattering of internationals that littered the days of the midweek. Let's hear about it. What, England, Ghana?
It was a great game. I mean, normally England friendly is about as welcome as a triple dose of Mogadon. I thought Ashley Young, who's had an indifferent season, again played pretty well. Ghana went for it. I mean, you could have had several red cards. I think it was a full on international rather than a friendly, and it was a great game. The lots of Ghanaian fans as well made for a better atmosphere than you normally get at Wembley. At least there wasn't much.
Yeah, people said the atmosphere was great.
Yeah, it was joyful rather than kind of having the no surrender brigade chanting about the IRA and booing and so on.
Well, it was interesting because I thought I'd heard Jacob say on the pod on Monday that it was sold out, the game, which it may have been. It certainly wasn't full at Wembley. There were quite a lot of visible empty seats, but it was definitely the best atmosphere that I've heard at Wembley in a while, and actually definitely the best game I've seen at Wembley in a while, certainly for a friendly. It was really entertaining. It was genuinely a lot of fun. I mean, I think it was interesting. At a certain point in the second half, the commentators on ITV said, hey, you know, this is the answer to all those who say these games are shouldn't be played right now, they're a waste of time. And I'm thinking, well, no, it's still sort of an inappropriate time to hold a friendly like this, because exactly as Sean said, there are all sorts of bad challenges flying in, and a lot of teams have been watching that game just hoping their players came through it unscathed. But you know, if it had been played in September, I think it would have just been a joy to watch.
If this England team played the England team from the weekend, which one would win?
It's an interesting question. I think I wouldn't necessarily want any England team to be relying on Jolyon Lescott playing at centre-back the way he did against Ghana, so perhaps that would be a flaw. But there were some players who acquitted themselves very well. You know, as Sean said, Ashley Young was very good. Stuart Downing played very well. Unfortunately, he's one of those players who I think, I don't know, you know, he's reached his level and we know what it is. But
Andy Carroll?
Well, he didn't have necessarily a great game all round. I'm not
by
sure
what
he
standards?
Best,
he scored a
but
goal.
He scored a fantastic goal. So, you know, in that sense, yes, he's done what he's asked to do as a striker.
Mm-hmm.
He was lumbering badly, though. I mean, if he hadn't have scored that goal, people would have said it was a bad performance. But he did suddenly,
He also appeared to have what resembled a canoe in his pocket.
Do you tell, Barry?
Well, when he scored the goal, there's a photo, and his left leg is bent at a hideous angle, which suggests he has some sort of double-jointed knee. And there was also a rather large bulge in his trouser area, which suggests that he was very excited to score his first England goal.
Wouldn't you be, Barry?
I would never score a goal for England.
That's true.
For a number of reasons.
I'm delighted for him. There were all sorts of other exciting midweek games. Netherlands, in particular, in their 5-3 win over Hungary, 1-0 at half-time, then 7 goals after the break, including an absolute screamer from Dirk Kuyt. Have you seen that?
I have, yeah.
Some debate as to whether Dirk actually meant it.
I thought it was a cross that ended up...
A cross? It wasn't a cross. He chipped him from miles out. I don't understand why people are doubting Dirk. Mark posts in saying, interesting statistics about the Dutch. Bert van Marwijk is now their most successful manager statistically. How about that?
Well, they haven't lost a game in 90 minutes since 2007, have they?
Is that so?
I think so, yeah, off the top of my
head. All right. Another interesting statistic says, Imark, about Friday's game, 11 players from 11 different clubs. I wonder how many times this happened before. Apparently all players know the system the Dutch play, and it doesn't really matter who comes in. There you go, eh? Germany. How about that, eh? Who saw that one coming? A 2-1 home defeat.
It's not a huge result. It was a friendly match. Australia are an all right side. They reached the final of the Asian Cup, etc. and so on.
All right. Ireland lost a pretty entertaining game with Uruguay, 3-2. Edson Cavani scoring again. He's on fire.
Yeah, it was a very entertaining game. I wouldn't be disheartened at losing as an Ireland fan. Shane Long put in a masterful performance as playing as a centre forward, and has probably done himself a huge favour in terms of getting a big transfer from Reading in summer, should he desire to leave or they desire to cash in on him.
Did anyone stud him across the face this time or not?
No, he was lucky enough to avoid that.
Right.
But Keith Fahey as well, I was very impressed with. I think he's now ahead of Darren Gibson in the pecking order, very much so. James McCarthy kind of let the game pass him by, didn't get as much time on the ball as he would have liked, he said himself afterwards, and seemed quite disappointed, but Trapattoni seemed quite enthused by his performance and said he'd get plenty more chances.
All right, so unlike Wayne Rooney, he won't be giving McCarthy the elbow?
No.
No, okay. Apologies if missed out to your team, it is a big planet. Let's move on now to the Premier... Oh, sorry, Pat. We're coming back to Italy later on.
No, it's not that. We're going all the way back to the England game, actually, which is just to say that Danny Welbeck... He was booed by the Ghana fans. He'd otherwise been in very good heart. He was
racist.
Booed by them because he decided to choose England over Ghana. But what I can't understand is why he'd give up the chance to play for a team with prospects of winning a significant international tournament to play for England.
I see where you're heading here. Yeah. Also, on an international note, we should mention, because we did say, you know, we hope it's not true, etc., about the banana incident, etc., and it wasn't. It was a German tourist, bizarrely, who elected to take a banana to a game and then throw it randomly onto a pitch.
I knew the chances of any Scottish supporter having a piece of fruit about the person were bound to be very slim.
There you go, then. On to the Premier League, can we? We can. Premier League. United and Chelsea. It's a big weekend for them, Sean. Yes. United are off at Upton Park, where they traditionally struggle, where they got thumped 4-0 in the Carling Cup earlier this season. Now, when I looked at this fixture, they're taking on West Ham, of course. So West Ham, who are only just above the relegation zone. So a very big game this for both teams. I was thinking, had this been a couple of weeks ago, you had that feeling that Man United were really stricken at the back. Is the situation vis-a-vis their defenders a bit more resolved now?
Well, Vidic is going to be back. I still think it's a tricky game. I mean, West Ham's recent record over their last six games is doing a Ted Rogers sign, 3-2-1. They've won three, drawn two, lost one, which puts them fifth in the form league. United...
Does that lift them out of the dusty bin of relegation?
Well, it has done. Yeah, they're one place off at the moment. Yeah. God, this is terrible. But United have failed to win 11 of their 15 away games this season. Obviously you fancy United to win, but West Ham's recent records suggest they have a chance of getting something.
Yeah, a draw. That would put the cat among the pigeons, wouldn't it?
Well, you know, United's recent run hasn't been great. They've lost three of their last six.
Yeah.
So they've been trying to put the cat amongst pitchers, but the trouble is Arsenal keeper.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, Arsenal. You're right. They are actually in second place. I was just looking at Chelsea, who, like Arsenal, have a game in hand on United.
But, I mean, I think it's worth, you know, talking briefly about Arsenal. If you want any side coming to, you know, to the Emirates, it's Blackburn. They've lost their last six games away, conceded 19 goals in the process. They're free falling, down the table, and you'd expect Arsenal to win that.
Paolo, who's going to be in goal for Arsenal against Blackburn?
Well, so long as it's not the reserve keeper Shea, who conceded 10 in a recent game against Aston Villa. Ooh. Reserves. But I assume it's going to be Almunia, which is. The one, is he not fit? Is this a development that I've missed?
Well, is he not fit in which sense?
Well, he's the one fit first team goalkeeper who isn't, you know, Jens Lehmann, who apparently isn't fit either. So
is he not?
No. So my understanding is it's Manuel Almunia until further notice.
All right.
Lehmann had a bit of a shocker against Wigan in the reserve game a couple of days ago.
Presumably that reserve keeper who let in 10 knew it was his big chance to impress and possibly get it a chance.
I think it was actually that, to be fair, Tim, was before the injury started piling up. It was a few weeks ago. But yes, I think my brother and I noted that result a little while ago and have been filled with dread for the future prospects ever since.
Well, of course, it's all his fault, isn't it?
I'm sure it was. I'm sure he was the
poor
only
guy.
One
yeah. anyway, Blackburn fighting, of course, for their own survival, 3 points off the bottom. Chelsea, though, as we mentioned, are also potentially in the title mix should United slip up. They head to Stoke
who are not an easy team to visit, of course, unless you're a big team. That's pretty
exactly.
much
it. I mean, I think Chelsea are the ideal side to face Stoke. They, you know, they're big, they're strong, defensively solid. In fact, Chelsea have the best defensive record in the league this season. And we've said this before on the pod as well. Stoke have an excellent home record, but against the very best sides at home, they often struggle. I mean, they've lost to United and Spurs at home this season, drew with Man City. So you would expect Chelsea to come through that. But, it'll be a tough, bruising game.
All right. Well, more interesting, perhaps, then, to move on to West Bromwich Albion and their clash with Liverpool. Liverpool, who are looking to catch up with Spurs for fifth place and get into Europe, who perhaps will have Carolyn Suarez starting. Would that be for the first time? I think it would be. First time starting together this season against a West Brom team who've only just broken out of the bottom three. But above all, Roy Hodgson up against the meanies who threw him out around Christmas time.
Yeah, so I suppose a lot of people will be hoping he can exact retribution, even if he doesn't seem quite the type who would, be...
Revenge, retribution, these will all be words he'll be using.
Sticking pins in a sort of a Liverpool chief exec doll. But West Brom have lost their last 13 meetings against Liverpool, and Liverpool haven't conceded a goal in the last 10, so the omens aren't great.
Although they are unbeaten, West Brom, under Roy Hodgson.
Yeah, they've, I think, drawn their last four at home. And yeah, they possibly get a draw. You just don't know, really.
All right, then. All right. OK, I'll move on from there because, there's so many teams with so much to play for. The bottom eight teams, everyone from Blackburn down. That's Blackburn, Villa, Blackpool, West Brom, West Ham, Wolves, Birmingham and bottom of the table, Wigan, all separated by just 3 points. Bit of a lottery, actually, then, to work out who's most in danger. Currently, the bottom three are Wolves, Birmingham, who have a game in hand, and Wigan. But a lot of people concerned about Aston Villa, who are at Everton this weekend, particularly with all the talk of dressing room unrest there. Nothing is quite as intriguing in football as the thought of players squabbling with their manager. So to find out more, let's now speak to our Midlands correspondent, Stuart James. Stuart, what's the picture really like there inside Villa? Is it a scene of a widespread ill feeling and unrest?
Well, I think there's certainly a hell of a lot of problems. I think three key things, really. You've got bad results, 26 points from 25 games, which is relegation form. That's over the course of Houllier's time in charge. You've got continual stories of player unrest, which have just gone on, really, almost from the first month or so since Houllier took over up to the present day. And then you've got a number of PR disasters, which sort of fall squarely on Houllier's shoulders. When he was unveiled the first day, he said ridiculously then that Aston Villa are a club that traditionally belong between 7th and 12th in the Premier League, which sort of smacked of ignorance, really, of the job he was taken over. And then we had the situation at Liverpool when he cozied up to his former club and said if he was going to lose 3-0 to anyone, he'd be happy if it was, rather it was Liverpool. And then obviously the Manchester City situation when he effectively sacrificed the FA Cup, even though Villa had a few fixtures that month and, had an opportunity to sort of try and get to the quarterfinals of what was their last chance to win any silverware and salvage something from a miserable season. So all those things together really have left him looking like a man really who's sort of clinging on at the moment.
Does it hurt Houllier further almost to see Villa players doing so well for England against Ghana?
Yeah, I think it's a good point, Palo. I think it's kind of in many ways made Houllier look even worse, to be honest with you, because, you see, in fairness, Downing's been decent all year, all season. He's been one of the better players, but Ashley Young hasn't been playing brilliantly for Villa of late. He had a good game at Bolton Wanderers away, but his form's been pretty hit and miss. Bent has gone off the boil a little bit. So, to see that kind of situation, then you've got Dunn, I think, played for the Republic Saturday last, when he was, in Houllier's words, not fit to play for Villa the previous week when they had so many defensive problems. So, yeah, all of that really has sort of painted things in a worse light, to be honest with you. And Downing was saying yesterday about the need for the Villa players to sort of replicate their international form at club level. But the thing that came through in that Wolves game for me was they looked like a club where a lot of the players were so disillusioned that you question how much they're actually playing for the manager now.
Stuart, Sean here. With all this talk of mutiny, any chance that if they lose the next couple of games that Julio could walk the plank?
Very good. Well, it's interesting you say that, Sean, because the Villa board are constantly peddling this line that, you know, he's their long-term appointment and he'll be here to the end of the season, you know, come what may. I think the supporters will have something to say about that if there's another inept home performance against Newcastle a week on Sunday. Equally, looking at Julio after the Wolves game, when his sort of daily briefing lasted, I think it was about 2 minutes, 10 seconds, and he couldn't wait to get away. He looked quite shocked and taken aback by, I think, a combination of what the display he'd just seen and the sort of abuse he was subjected to from the fans. So I do wonder whether it will get to the point when actually if Villa don't act, Julio will say, you know, this isn't for me. He may stumble through to the end of the season, but I find it difficult to believe this can go on much longer, because even if he starts the following campaign, Sean, there's going to be absolutely, you know, zero goodwill towards him to sort of fall back on.
Stuart James in the Midlands. Now, Italy, Barry.
Yes.
Yeah. One or two things to talk about this week, including
Which
the Milan
is
Derby.
It one or two?
Sorry?
One or two, which is it?
One.
Good.
It's Italian football. Boy, so much, you know, so much. I don't know, we're going to need several extra parts this week because there's so much to talk about. The Milan Derby, if you only see one Italian game this season, watch this one. Perhaps my one of my favourite Italian games ever was the 4-3 a couple of years back. I was going to say at the San Siro, but they're always at the San Siro.
Yeah.
Home and away. Anyway, yes, as I say, always an exciting fixture, apart from the one earlier this season. And this time, crikey, the title's on the line.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because Milan aren't actually playing the most entertaining football in the league to watch at the moment. They've had quite a few low-scoring games, but simply for what it means, it's a fascinating game, even if it doesn't turn out to be a classic in itself. And there's reasons to believe it should be a good game, because Inter are playing expansive football. They're terrible at the back and great going forward at the moment. But
under Leonardo, they've picked up 37 points in 15 games. They only got 23 in the 15 under Benitez. Ooh, but Leonardo's never won a derby. It's his taboo game. He's only been at...
Well, that's it. It's his taboo game because he had a couple while he was at Milan, and yeah. Milan weren't winning the derby. So, yeah. I mean, it's the fascinating game for all those reasons. And obviously, that what makes it most interesting is that it's almost not just about these two teams for once. You know, normally this game would be just about Milan and Inter, but actually, we're looking at a genuine four-horse race at the top of the table. Right. You know, Edinson Cavani came out and said the other day that he hopes that Inter win, because if Inter win, then Napoli can be suddenly, if they win as well, only 1 point off the top of the table, and they still have Inter to play, so they're very much in the mix. And it's got a real sense of importance that we haven't seen in a derby for a while. And I thought it was interesting that Adriano Galliani was harking back to the 2003 Champions League game, because that was the last time when he thought there was a derby this important.
Oh, really? Really? No Ibrahimovic, of course, and they really struggled without him in their last match, Milan, away at Palermo. You mentioned Napoli. They, of course, are playing Lazio. The team, are they? Lazio are fourth, aren't they? Yeah, it's third versus fourth.
So no, they're actually fifth, Lazio. So Milan Inter is first versus second. Napoli versus Lazio is third versus fifth. And then you've also got Roma Juventus, which is sixth versus seventh.
But what makes Napoli Lazio even more exciting, beyond Napoli's title ambitions and Lazio's hopes of staying in the top four picture and all that, is the fact that Napoli's president punched Lazio's president during the week at a special dinner they were having just to kind of keep everyone cosy. And it was all about TV rights, and there was a bit of an altercation, and a bit of a scuffle broke out, and apparently cuffed him around the ear and took one on the shoulder as well. Yeah. He's a volatile man, De Laurentiis. This is according to reports. I wasn't personally present. So that's going to be an interesting game.
Yeah.
Eddie Reha as well, former manager one now at the other.
Yeah, well, it's a game with plenty of that, you know, of needle to it, with plenty riding on it as well, which I'm sure probably had a bit to do with them coming to blows with tension to do with what it means to them both. Because obviously for Napoli, you know, they're trying to win the league, but they're also trying to make sure they finish in the top four. Lazio were top of the table for a little bit earlier in the season. You know, they slipped back a little bit, but they're still very much in the race for a Champions League place. So there's a lot on it. And you know, unfortunately for Lazio, the bad news is that Crescenzio Sepe, who's the Archbishop of Naples, says he has been praying for Napoli all season, and that's why they're doing so well.
All right.
which I know we're going to get on to some slightly less savoury match fixing stuff later on. But I was thinking, isn't that a form of match fixing to have someone that close to the big man pulling for you?
That's an interesting point. Would be amazing to see Napoli, he said, moving swiftly along in the Champions League. Wouldn't it be great to see Napoli back in the in the Champions League?
Absolutely, and I'd love to see Udinese in there as well. The way they've been playing this season, lovely football.
Yeah, because they might hang on to some of their players if they were to.
There's talk about Sanchez going to Barcelona, isn't there?
Well, there's talk about Sanchez going everywhere, but they say they might be able to hang on to him, but I don't know.
I don't think Sanchez will stay, but the point is that actually the core of a very good team at Udinese, even without Sanchez, and of course they won't be as good, but you saw Asamoah playing for Ghana at the weekend. Inler is a player they've been talking about losing for a while, but if they can hold on to him, he's very important for them. Isla's been playing very well. Sorry, you're trying to cut me in.
No. You mentioned Juve, Roma, not as big as it used to be. This neither team really have prospects of the title, and even getting into the top four positions looks a little bit unlikely. Juve currently seventh, Roma sixth. Juve 11 points off the the top four, and Roma six off fourth place. Big news in Roma, of course, the fact that there's been a preliminary agreement now for the American Tom De Benedetto to take over, although the actual deal won't go through until the 15th of April. But they're dreaming there in the capital.
Yeah, it's one of those deals that has been as good as done for as long as I can remember, but somehow still isn't done because there's so much technicality to be done. It seems like what's happening now is he's formed his agreement with the bank. They're now going to form a new company because now no one seems to actually own anything. They own companies that own something. He's going to form a new company with the bank that will own 67% of the shares, then they're going to still be looking for some minority shareholders to take up the rest of the slack.
Right, anyway, so they're playing Juventus at the weekend. Also, Sicilian derby. It's just one thing after another in Serie A, isn't it? Sicilian derby, Catania-Palermo, of course.
Almost feels like a bit of a shame because they have packed like all of the best fixtures into one weekend, which means that there's some weekends either side which don't have quite as many high-profile
ones. Don't tell Barry that, he won't believe you.
Yeah, indeed. Of course, that's not the only story in the Italian game right now. There's also the excellent win in Ukraine, in Kiev, for 2-0, Barry.
So are you not going to tell us all about next weekend's draw between Kiev and who is it?
Sampdoria.
The ever unpredictable of Italian football.
Yes.
Yeah, I am in a second. I just wanted to mention that Italy, after their 1-0 win over Slovenia, then went and won in Ukraine 2-0 in a friendly. This is interesting because they've only won one of their previous 11 friendlies with just 10 men. And you probably saw, did you? The brilliant backheel with which Jovinko set up Matri for his debut Italy goal. Seek it out. Seek it out. It's a delicious assist. It really is. Anyway, well done to Prandelli, whose Italy revolution continues apace. Now, the other story, Barry, which you brought up, in fact, last week, was the fact that various Serie B games have been investigated for suspicious betting patterns. This week, the intriguing thing was that they now opened an investigation for a game that hasn't even been played yet, Chievo-Sampdoria, which is quite unusual.
They're a draw.
Sean, you were mentioning some of the figures involved in
this. Well, I was looking at Betfair, and £400,000 has been matched on the game, almost all of it on the draw, and the draw's trading about 1.6. And normally a draw would be more like 3.5, on average.
But you were comparing that with the amount of money that's...
Yeah, if you look at kind of... I mean, I was looking earlier this week on, say, West Ham against Manchester United, and earlier this week it was maybe 30,000 compared to 10 times that match. 10 times that
amount. Sampdoria is a big game. Let's not underestimate that. Sam currently in relegation trouble.
I think the thing that needs to be raised here, and actually the guy who there's a guy who's raised this, a senator, has raised this, Franco Cardiello, and he wrote to Berlusconi saying the game should be suspended. He wrote to the Prime Minister about it. And actually one of the things that he's talked about more than even the result and the fixing of that is that he thinks that basically a lot of Italian mobsters are using betting as a way of laundering their money.
Right.
So, by betting it all on a game, and especially if you can arrange the result even better, but even if you bet it and accept a loss on it, then it means that the money is no longer so easily traceable back to where it's come from in the first place.
There's a whole series of other games that... this isn't a new thing because with the police and wiretaps and things, that you often get games coming out that might be suspicious or suspicious betting patterns. It usually involves something like a 1-1 draw. And it is probably worth mentioning as well that, for example, even without there being mafia involvement or anything else, a gambling expert might look at Sampdoria Kiev and go, well, that's going to be a draw. They both need a point.
I remember back in Euro 96 when both Holland and England needed a point. The draw very rarely was as the favourite as the three results.
Yeah, but in Italy there's more of the culture of saying, I need this, you need this, we can come to an arrangement.
But that price was 6-4. This is the other way around, it's 4-6. So it is very strange. And I mean, you know better than me, but very little seems to be done about these convenient one-all draws towards the end of the season.
Well, the convenient one, this is the thing that there has for a long time been the culture of not harming each other, not stepping on each other's toes. If there's a mutually acceptable result, and we've talked about this many times in the pod, while not fixing the game, the players will just go out and be content both with a point. There's a big difference between that. You might not think so ethically, but in terms of, you know, the legal grounds, there's a massive difference between that and people actually coming in and buying players and fixing the result. And that's something which has been punished before, but clearly there is a lot of concerns about some of these recent games, particularly involving Atalanta, who are flying at the top of Serie B, but could yet find themselves missing out on promotion a la Genoa some years ago. Anyway, nothing actually proved yet, so hey. Now, a man with some big stories from the crazy world of Spanish football is Sid Lowe, and he joins us now on the line. Sid.
Hello, James. How are you doing?
Hi, Sid. What are you up to?
I'm putting together some stuff for Spurs Real Madrid.
All right.
Trying to talk about some of the Madrid players, hopefully talk to some of the Madrid players and basically kind of prepare some nice stuff before the game on Tuesday.
Well, you better hurry. It's only 5 days away now. Who have you spent?
You are shameless.
We're laughing, listeners, because when I first spoke to Sid, we had a bit of an argument about when Spurs' game with Real Madrid. But that's not important right now. Do tell, Sid, do tell. How did it go, your big training ground encounter with Jose Mourinho?
That was great fun. It really was good fun. The press team actually beat them. We won 3-2. Jose Mourinho did play, and he played in goal in the first half. Made a couple of brilliant saves. A couple of really, really good saves. Then he came onto the pitch in the second half and possibly produced the most shameless dive I've ever seen to try and win a penalty.
Really? Really, Sid?
Shameless enough that he got up and started giggling when he didn't get it. He was complaining that the referee gave us two penalties, despite the fact that he was in the pay of Real Madrid. So you can't even control the referees when you've got them bought.
Yeah, it's long been a problem. Paolo once.
Was he not surrounded by hacks during the game, chancing their arm and trying to squeeze a cheeky interview out of him while playing him?
Yeah, running alongside him. So, Jose, who's going to play at the weekend? I think I wonder if that might have been part of the reason for the decision to go in goal, and then, of course, got so frustrated that he wanted to go on pitch. So in that sense, I think he controlled it reasonably well. But I didn't kick him. One of my teammates did, and he went down rolling around trying to win the free kick. Once he got the free kick, he was fine. He then also had a clash with one of our players, but I think immediately realised that he was the one making the most of it, so not too much came of it.
It's good to know that Jose practices what he preaches, doesn't he? I mean, he behaves that way, tumbling over, diving, fawning.
Well, at half time, talking about Jose practicing what he preaches, now obviously it's slightly cliched and a stereotype, which possibly isn't entirely fair, although I'm sure we could debate this for an ever and ever and ever. But at half time, we'd played all the football and they were 1-0 up with a long hoof down the middle and someone had scored. And Mourinho did walk past us and go and said to us, "That's pragmatic football."
That's amazing. It's so exciting, Sid. You must still be buzzing after this whole thing.
It was great fun, yeah, no, it was very exciting. I've seen quite a lot of bits of footage of it on Spanish TV.
Yeah, there's one of you tripping yourself up and falling over.
I don't embarrass myself too much because I'm just not in the footage.
Well, yeah, you are though, aren't you, Sid? Let's talk about the bit of footage that you're in where you trip yourself up and fall over like a big lemon.
I don't trip myself up and fall over.
You do.
That's a vicious slur.
Everyone's seen the picture. All the posters have put it in. All right, well, we'll move on, eh?
Oh, that's a photograph, James.
Yeah.
See, a photo lies. I didn't trip up. I was turning about to make a stunning sliding tackle.
All right, then, nice one. Good to know, Sid. Now, all right.
I did, however, get a terrible free kick given against me by aforementioned terrible former First Division referee. So
yes.
Quite what you saw, I don't know.
Oh, OK. Listen, on to the real big story, of course, in Spanish football this week. Shakira, has she been banned from the Bernabeu?
Jorge Valdano says no. I love this story because you've got this situation in which Shakira, as probably people now know, is currently dating Gerard Piqué from Barcelona. Shakira, whose music was put on before the game, virtually every game at Real Madrid this year, but not as often as one or two other tracks, which drive me mad even more. And there was this story in both papers on the same day, both of the main sports papers in Madrid, saying Shakira has been banned from the Bernabeu because she's seeing Gerard Piqué, to which I could only think, would Leo Messi please go out with the black eyed peas? He would save us an enormous amount of problem at every Real Madrid game. But the trouble is, the next day, Jorge Valdano came out and said, it's not true, she's not being vetoed at all.
Shakira, of course, is noted for such contributions to the world of music as Hips Don't Lie, with that marvellous Ooh Boy I'm On Tonight rejoinder. And from, what's that song called? Whenever, Wherever, or Whatever. Lucky that my lips don't only mumble, they spill kisses like a fountain. Lucky that my breasts are small and humble, you won't confuse them with mountains.
You made that up.
I didn't. Shakira that made that up. I can't take credit for that kind of genius. That is Shakira.
I have a feeling that Shakira is like Sepp Blatter's favourite musician, because she did the 2006 World Cup before the song, and she did 2010.
Really?
Even though, yeah.
Well, Waka Waka, very much 2010, because this is Africa, as she said, you know, just
to underline
that.
She did do the 2006 one as well. I remember doing 2006 on Spanish TV, and we opened every single programme with her every morning at 10:30. We started with Shakira.
All right. The Black Eyed Peas are penciled in to do the next one, you know. I'm serious.
Shoot me now.
Sid, is there going to be a strike this weekend?
No, there isn't. Judge for it out. What I want to know now is the strike that was being proposed by the league was thrown out by a judge because it was illegal. So in other words, they were proposing an illegal strike, or indeed owner's lockout. It's important to make that distinction. The clubs now are all coming out saying, oh, well, we weren't supporting it, really. So you ask yourself, well, who was supporting it? The fans are furious. The clubs say they weren't happy. The vice president of the league has walked out and said he's not happy. One of the other vice presidents has said we need a complete top-to-bottom overhaul of the structure of the league. Isn't it time the league president resigned?
I don't know, Sid. You're the Spanish football expert.
Well, I've just given you the evidence, the exhibits A, B, C, and D. And he's also the guy who, by the way, ran Real Sociedad into the ground. So maybe it is.
Yeah,
Of course, the issue in all of this is in defence of Asti Athalan, who's the president of the league, is to what extent he makes the decisions and to what extent he is, and I think this is the truth, just a visible figurehead of a body that's really quite problematic because of the way that it's set up. But anyway, the bottom line is there is no strike. Games will go ahead, and it could be an interesting weekend because Barcelona face Villarreal, and I've not got the statistic in hand, but I think I'm right in saying that Barcelona have only won 5 of their last 13 games immediately after an international break, and going away to Villarreal is the hardest game they've got left, except going away to Real Madrid. And possibly even harder, actually, going to Madrigal than going to the Bernabeu. We'll see, obviously.
All right.
Paolo. Just while you're on Villarreal, I was just wondering if there's been any... If it even registered in Spain that Giuseppe Rossi, obviously back in the Italy team, scored against Ukraine. And it seems to me like one of those players that everyone in Spain should be shocked he isn't starting for Italy, because it's not like Italy have got... players, their strikers haven't been scoring a lot of goals recently, and Rossi's been scoring an absolute hatful for Villarreal, if I'm right.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a case to be made for saying that Giuseppe Rossi is the best player in Spain this season outside of the big two. Now, obviously, Madrid and Barcelona are just so far ahead of everyone else that it almost feels fair to kind of measure everyone against them. Beyond Madrid and Barcelona, Rossi's been brilliant. 15 goals, I think I'm right in saying 4 or 5 assists in La Liga. He's playing really fantastically well. Mentality would be he's got to start for Italy.
Sid, you have to remove your tongue from that man's rectum. It's nauseating. True. On Twitter, you and Rossi with your little bromance. It's pitiful. Oh, Giuseppe, you're so great.
Is that Giuseppe giggling now?
should we go Twitter bromances? Dara O'Brien.
Dara O'Brien has nothing but disparaging remarks to say about me.
Yeah, but you're blushing, aren't you?
But that's just your public lover's tiff, isn't it?
Right.
Oh, well, more to the point, it's unrequited love. You're desperately in love with him, but he just can't give a toss.
Okay, it's all turning out well here in part 3 of...
I met Darrow Breen's tour manager on Sunday. He's a friend of a friend of mine.
Right.
And he told me that Darrow Breen was nothing but disparaging about my abilities as a stand-up comedian when I used to do it many years ago. Oh. That hurt.
Isn't that because you were once put on a bill ahead of him?
I accidentally ended up, due to a mistake at the printers, being my name was above Darrow Breen's on a poster.
Right.
And he got
a bit
upset.
Bill of the poster. You were on the bill. I was on Police 5 once. I'll stop to that.
And Jackie too, don't forget, Sid. Hey? Jackie photo story. Sid was a bit of a
Jackie,
cover star.
The annual.
You are joking.
It's true. I've seen the pictures. Sid showed them to me. This is when I first knew Sid when we were both about 18. We're back to his after we'd met up playing football or something at the first year of university. He got all the copies when he was a star out.
He kept them.
Yeah, he's got them all.
Oh, that's nice.
I'm out here. Is Jackie? Isn't that like a young girl's magazine?
Correct.
He was the heartthrob.
Right. Have you been in Dear Deidre's
photo casebook?
I think, well, in my underwear, guys. Yeah. I must fix the washing machine. I think I should defend myself here by saying when Sean says he kept them, I think it's more a case of his parents kept them.
All right. And which proud parent wouldn't? Is my thinking. Well, anyway, that does sound interesting, this Villarreal-Barcelona game, Sid. So I'm delighted that's going ahead. Let's speak on Monday, then, when we see how that goes.
OK, fantastic.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Sid in Spain. Well, that pretty much brings us to the end of today's Football Weekly Extra. Just a couple of posts for you. A lot of people mentioning that Ricardo, we were wondering on Monday whatever happened to him. Keep up, boys, says JustMe09. Amongst others. Portugal's Ricardo, once presumably a person on grata in England, is now playing in the Championship for Leicester City as their regular sticksman. He signed for Sven's side quite recently. Some Foxes fans believe previous incumbent Chris Wheel should still be number one. A lot of other people surprised about the various omissions we made in discussing goal-scoring keepers, the likes of Jorge Campos, Jens Lehmann in earlier days, and Irene Higuita as well, who scored 30 goals in clubs and 7 with the national team. Very impressive. And on that note, that's where we come to the end of today's Football Weekly Extra. Back on Monday. In the meantime, many thanks. Producer Ben, Barry Glendening, Paolo Bandini, Sean Ingle. Tomorrow there will be a paper review available on the Guardian website, so perhaps you'll join me for that. But in the meantime, from all of us here, it's goodbye and have a super weekend.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.